was affiliated with BMF.
I did play a major role, and they indicted me. I was the only woman on the first indictment.
Okay, if y'all watch the show, and you
said, Lala is portraying my character.
Okay, tell us about the nomination.
I got nominated for NAACP Image Award.
Tell us what you know, based on what's already out there.
Ooh, they were, you know, these young guys that we didn't have much. Guys that wanted to be in the business to make money.
So how'd they get to that money, sis?
Through a connection that I brought Terry to. And okay. What I told him was, I'm going to make you rich. I showed him how to make his first million. I told him how to what to do with his first million. And then from that, he just took off.
Did you introduce your ex to Meech and them?
He introduced me to them.
Let's talk about this relationship. Was it all peaches and cream?
A lot of abuse.
What does that first moment of abuse look like?
The first hit caught me off guard. He's not going to let you go home. You can't leave. He's very remorseful. Then once he did it, he's showing me love again. Like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. He's like, oh, I love you so much, I would never do it again. This was the cycle, and I didn't know how to get out of it. Like, when I say the fights were just crazy, dabbing him, I'm blowing up his car, he blowing up my car, because I don't have my nose broke or black eyes.
So how did your relationship with him finally end?
When he went to prison.
You doing it. You're still a successful entrepreneur, mm-hmm. doing so many things, infiltrated Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You came home and took charge of your life, and you turned the negative into a positive.
I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Now that I know I deserve more, I'm busy loving myself, putting me first. Made up my mind, I'm on my grind. My time to shine, you hit my line. I press decline, no time for that. I'm moving forward and right now. You're in my past, I've come too far to turn back now. Not going back, I see that everybody's sleeping on me. They really gotta see it to believe it.
Welcome to I Love Me More with Tara Wallace.
And Dr. Jamila T. Davis.
Y'all, this is the place where people share their stories of resilience for the purposes of strength, empowerment, and healing. This is the love seat. This is where people sit. They tell us what's going on with them, where they've been. And we really try to give them a space where they can share their stories. Perhaps they haven't had a space to share it before. And we want people to be able to look at that and heal from it. It's not salacious. It's not for gossip. It's really for empowerment, strength, and healing.
Because what we figured out along this journey is that when we come together, we heal quicker, right? There might be some things that I know that Tara doesn't know and she shares with me, then it can help me. And same vice versa. Like, there's some things some of these women can share that can help you guys. So it's all in the exchange. Because a lot of times, the messy stuff, the sticky stuff, the stuff that we're not so proud of, we don't really get a chance to share that, or we don't are told that we shouldn't share it, right?
Exactly.
But it's in our sharing that we actually break free and get healed.
And I found that happens so much with women, but we're not given the space to be human, right? And then a safe space to share it so that we can heal. And not just are we doing it on the couch, we're also doing it in our community. That's a safe space for women to come and share. We're in the community.
Yes.
We're talking. We have live events in the community.
We have experts in the community, right?
So you got to come to the community and share there as well.
And how you can join our community is simply by visiting www.blackwomenslivesmatter.com and just click the button, join, and it's absolutely free. It's a space where we link up. We actually come into the community, so you get to interact with us live. It's so dope. It's just an experience that is just, oh, I'm so grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely. But Jamila, I'm about to get you back for what you did to me the other day.
Get me back.
I'm about to get you back for what you did to me the other day. I got a series of lightning round questions for you.
Oh, that's what you need. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. So, you ready to jump in?
Let's get it.
All right, love or marriage?
Marriage, baby. But I need them both. But, baby, now it's time for marriage. Yes.
All right. Texting or driving?
Texting.
Okay. Invisibility or super strength?
Super strength.
Virtue or sin?
Virtue, honey. Virtue, these little sin them other days, but virtue now.
So you asking for permission or are you begging for forgiveness?
Oh, I'm asking for permission. I'm going to ask. You know, I used to then ask, you know, they say, you know, you ask for forgiveness later, you know, but yeah. I'm going to ask for permission. We're going to do it the right way.
We've healed. 8 steps. You hear it? And would you rather have sex with someone that you hate, but it's amazing, or someone that you love and it's terrible? That's always so tricky, right?
I'm going to have to go for number two because I'm healing, baby, right? I'm healing. All right? So I don't want no more toxicity because, baby, you know that. Ooh, that good stuff. All that
I don't want no toxic good stuff. That okay, good get stuff out of here with that. Stuck. I think.
That good
toxic that's Jamila. Stuff. That's Jamila's answer. I'm going to leave that alone.
Well, all right, come on. Let's move on.
All right, y'all. That was our lightning round. I had to get her back because she hit me off the cuff with that the other day, and I wasn't ready. So I'm like...
I wasn't ready either, but that's all right. So you got me.
That's the purpose of the lightning round. We want to know.
That was up and it stuck. So you already know what's next, right?
You have
yours coming.
Guys, up next, it is our next guest you don't want to miss, okay? Should we say the Motor City is in the house?
Definitely the Motor City is in our house. And this sister, she's been through so much, right? Mm-hmm. Her story has been, she's now nominated for NAACP Insane. Award through her story. Just amazing person who's been through so much, overcame, still overcoming, and she gonna teach us some stuff today. Baby, this couch, woo, is about to get lit up in here because we're gonna be talking about some things, and that's what it's all about, transformation. Stay tuned, mm-hmm. But before you go, you already know what it is. We gotta pay these bills, so let's go pay these bills and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is I Love Me More. Breaking free from toxicity.
What's up, y'all? It's Tara Wallace. And Dr. Jamila T. Davis and I have something so exciting to share. We're bringing I Love Me More, a live segment to one of the world's largest hair shows, World Natural Hair Health and Beauty Show. And you guys already know how I love health and beauty. So come and hang out with us April 26th through the 28th. It's going to be a live segment. And come in and be a part of our healing community. Not only are we going to be on stage, we're going to be in the audience. We're going to be shopping. We're going to have a booth. We're going to be there to hang out with y'all. We cannot wait. ATL, here we go.
Right, y'all. So you know I'm super excited because I got my sister on the show today. So without further ado, let's give it up for Tonessa Wells.
I feel like this is the woman of the hour.
Oh, baby.
Yeah, on the couch. Put me on the love spot, seat. Huh? Yes.
The queen, the extraordinaire, baby.
It's so much going on with you right now. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you guys for having me. This is special.
Yes. So pretty. If y'all don't know, our sister is out here doing big things, right? You want to just, let's go forward before we go backwards. Just tell us about the nomination and how you feeling and that whole thing.
Oh, I got nominated for, I'm a nominee.
Okay.
For NAACP Image Award. Ooh. And my gosh, you know how when you see the stars and they be asking them how they feel? I never thought, I'm like, is that real? Mm-hmm. Do they already know? But you really don't know. Mm-hmm. They call me like 7 o'clock in the morning. And PR guy, why is he calling me this early? Because I kind of forgot about the whole deal because they don't keep you up on it. Mm-hmm. And when he said, you got nominated, I'm like, what? Like, what?
Yes.
Like, what? Wow. And it's like that feeling. It was just, I mean, when I tell you it was surreal, it was like I just laid there for a minute and I cried. Mm-hmm. Now, it's like, I can't believe it. Like, my story, you know? Right. What people believed in, I didn't see it, you know. I'm just telling my story. I'm just telling my truth. I'm just talking about my life. But when other people see my journey, they felt that message that I was trying to convey. And for them to say that I was a nominee in it amongst all these amazing actors and these movies, it was so dope.
Amazing.
Yes.
And for those out there, that's inspiring to us because it lets us know pain and purpose. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, you can achieve things. Mm-hmm. You can receive awards and commendations after all the storm. So represent the rainbow right now. So
Thank you.
On the love couch for a reason. That's so dope. Yes.
And that our stories are important.
Yeah.
They do matter. Mm-hmm.
They do matter, right? It took me a long time to start talking about my story. You know, it was just like, I was going through a lot, and I didn't want to talk about it, you know. And I was like, one day, I was like, you know what? I just had a conversation with my younger son. He said, you should tell it. You should do your story.
Baby, you was affiliated with, I guess, the number one. It's not even, you can't even say a 2, 3, 4. The number one, right, organization, you know, in our time, right, like for the BMF thing. And so I guess so many people will want to claim that. And it's so funny that somebody like you would be like, you know, hold up, you know, because I guess you see both sides of it, right?
Yeah, I see both sides. It was, you know, you have a lot of highs and lows, you know, and a lot of people don't see that fall or what can happen. Okay. You know, they are ignorant into the what can happen with the law. We are ignorant, not all, but most of us are ignorant to the law. So we out there just having fun, not thinking about the consequences, just living our lives just out there, you know, not understanding, you know, the people that we're putting in danger, ourselves, our families, our communities. And when that fall comes, it's like, ooh, you know, it hits hard. But the highs were like the highs. It's like you adrenaline, you know, you feeling powerful, you feeling strong, you feeling like leaders. Everybody looking at me, you know, look at me, I'm here, I'm walking through the room. And people love that. For some reason, people, I mean, I guess we all love it. I mean, you know, you get addicted to it. You get addicted to that high. You know, the money, the power, the feeling, you know, people looking at you and calling your name or the rooms and everything you're walking in. But when you fall, baby, it's something different.
Yo, it's so crazy because I guess we're going forward and we could go back. We could dance a little bit with this one. Mm-hmm. But being a part of a notorious drug organization like BMF, right? Mm-hmm. So, you and myself are both are formerly incarcerated women.
Yes.
Right? So I never met you until last year, but I heard of you because your story preceded itself. And then you kind of educated me a little bit about the whole BMF thing with women. So can we talk about that? Because we know it's Meech and
Terry,
which who is the one
the
that
one
you,
I was dating.
You dated, right? Mm-hmm. So the two brothers, we know about that. But when it comes to women in the organization, I've met a couple of women that claim to be the woman of the organization, but then you kind of schooled me about the indictments and the women. So I just want you to set the record straight on that and you and your role, and then we can go back and go, you know, go from there.
Well, when I look at it, like, it was just me with all the guys. And, you know, I came in before, even before BMF, I had already been in the streets as a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like me and them, you know, the guys and me. You know, I was always mobbing with them because I came into it with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when a lot of women say they were a part of it, I don't remember that. I know everybody had their girlfriends around or their side chicks or whatever they had, you know, their pieces around. But when it was me handling in our organization the money and watching and doing certain things, it was me. We had, you know, a couple of friends that got indicted later on.
Mm-hmm.
But when with the first indictment, I did play a major role, and they indicted me. I was on the first indictment, the only woman on the first indictment.
Okay, so that was what it was, the only woman on the first indictment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's so crazy because, not that we're glorifying crime here, because trust me, we gonna heal and we're going to learn. But it's so crazy that a woman, right, you actually was beneficial to the organization. You helped the organization to gain the name and the esteem that it's known as today. Would you say? And would you?
I mean, men get offended when you say that. But, like, I came into it. I had already, you know, I was already in the game before I even met T and Meech. Mm-hmm. I had been in the game. I'm 9 years older than T and Meech. So I had already been in the game. I kind of, as a young girl, grew up into the game. So when we came together, I gave them a part of what I already had. Like, I introduced them to my connect.
So that sounds to me like we're partners. So
yeah.
Take it off the drug business.
Yeah,
right?
We're partners.
Get it off drug business, and let's go into real business. In real business, me and Tara, we're partners. We came together on this thing, right? She got some, I got some. We say, okay, so if you coming together on something, and
just
then y'all
like
building something,
we're building
right?
Something.
So then you have a big role in it.
Yeah.
Not a small one.
Big role. Yeah. Oh, wow. Because when I first met T, he was just my friend. You know, and I'm watching, he's kind of under me and my ex-husband. So You know, I'm like, okay, then
baby, if y'all don't know the story, this gets juicy, right? So she's talking about her ex-husband. So you was with your ex, and just explain that for people that don't watch the show. Mm-hmm. Now, if y'all watch the show and you've heard about BMF, is it Lala that represents?
Lala is portraying my character.
Okay, so Lala portrays her character on the show.
Unofficially, but yes.
Unofficially, okay. So let's get into it. So tell us a little bit about your, we're going to go back and try to get the understanding. How the hell did you become, you know, pretty much it's a drug lord.
Yeah.
Because that's really the title. You know, how do you become, it's not even a queen pin, it's a drug lord because you're over all this, like, how in the world? So we'll go back to that, but just explain to us the story.
What happened was I was dating my boyfriend and we got married. He was a kingpin. And I wanted to be a part of that world. I just dove right in. I wanted to do what he was doing. It excited me. You know, it was like a young girl watching somebody. They moving all this weight. They dressing fancy. People, you know, looking at them. You know, they the man. I wanted to be that woman on his arm. But I wanted to be involved. It excited me. Like, you know how when you used to watch, I can say like, movies like Bonnie and Clyde or something like that. In my head, I wanted to be that. I wanted to be that power girl next to that powerful man. Mm-hmm. But more so in it. I always thought that I could do it better than almost he could do it. You know what I'm saying? I grew up with three brothers, and I always was ruling the house. You know, I was always a leader in something. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to take over. I could totally relate.
And Tara might be looking because, you know, she sometimes, when I bring my brother sisters on, Tara be looking like, baby. But I was that same girl.
Yeah.
And for me, it was my boyfriend dumped me. He was getting money. And then I started messing with another dude and they was getting me. And then I'm like, yo, I always had an entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yo, you could do this like this. You could do that like that. Yo, if you got the connect, you could re-up and come back and do it like this. So I also found myself in the game.
Yeah.
Now, not like you now, sis. Like, now I'm going, you know, I did some things, but I ain't do what you did now. But I can relate from that position of wanting to be that because you see them with that and you see them getting that money and you like, if they could get it, I can get it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I took him, my ex-husband was from the east side and I was from the west side. And I'm like, they ain't got this on the west side. Let me take this on the west side. And he was like, okay. It was just like a partnership, but I always thought that I could push him to do better and get more. You know, like you said, that entrepreneur skills.
So
like,
did you introduce your ex to Meech and them? Or they had already
he introduced me to them.
Okay.
Because we were, like you said, a partner. Mm-hmm. We were together like if any other business. Mm-hmm. And so everybody that he brought in, he wanted to run by me to make sure, you know, that they were cool, they were going to work out and telling me what their role was going to be. And so when he brought them around, that's what it was. I met them. They were too young. At the time, they were young, just young kids to me.
Mm-hmm.
That time, I'm like, okay.
And so how does it get romantic?
It didn't get romantic until after my ex-husband, he got caught up.
Okay.
Because I told him, don't do something. And he did it anyway. Mm. And so he got caught up. So afterwards, I had to be my own one. Now I'm by myself. I don't have a partner anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the streets. I'm handling it. I met a connect on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just, you know, running the streets by myself.
Which is so dangerous.
Which is so dangerous. But for some reason, I never feared.
Mm.
You know, I don't know if that's being a young woman and just don't have a fear of anything. I didn't have a fear of nothing.
Mm.
You know, I always thought I can handle anything that came my way. I demanded my respect.
Okay.
People used to think that I was like, she's mean, she's cruel, she's shrewd, you know. But really, I didn't feel it like that. I'm just running a business. I ran a business like it was any other business. You know, you had to run it that way. If you wanted to make the money, you wanted to be safe. You know, you had to make sure you were safe. Everybody around you was safe. So that's how I had. And being a woman, you had to, you know, demand your.
So what level of the business was, you know, Meech and his brother on when they met you and got, was they No. Was it the BMF thing? No. Or what
when
was
we
it?
When, they first, when I first met them, they were just really young guys. I don't, you know, I don't watch the BMF mm-hmm. show, so, but a lot of people tell me, so I don't remember that part that, you know, like they says, well, it's not true, right, a true story. So I don't remember that part of them. When
the
I
way that they told them.
The way they're telling it.
Tell us, since that's why you want to
talk to me. Yeah, I was going to say, let's tell the way tell I, us, you know, tell us, you know, based on what's already out there, right?
Right.
Like, what based on those stories and what you know to be true?
What I know to true, they were, you know, these young guys that really didn't have much. You know, they were nice guys, you know, young guys that wanted to be in the business to make money. But when I met them, they didn't have, you know, the money that they show on the show. Mm-hmm. And so.
So how they get to that money, sis? Let's talk about that.
Through a connection that I brought Terry to, you know, and like I told him,
so
I really, really
Terry to the connect.
Yeah, to my connect. And okay. What I told him was, I told him, I said, I'm going to make you rich.
Ooh.
Just like that. And I said, I'm going to make you rich. And I said, when I make you rich, don't let this go to your head. I'm going to show you how to work this money. So I showed him how to make his first million. I told him how to what to do with his first million. And then from that, he just took off.
Wow. So you take this younger man, who's 9 years younger than you.
But he was just my friend. He always watched my back. He was somebody, because I was a broken woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mentally something had to be broken inside of me to even want to take those chances in the street.
Right. That's right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Right. And we're going to go back and talk about that. So I'm glad you said that. So, you, baby, this is a juicy one. We got to find all the details now. But I want to get to the part because I feel like, even though your movie's out there and people see and people know it's I want to just put the facts on the table so those that's just tuning in could get right to it. So now you had, and you said it wasn't romantic. So it didn't start romantic at all. You
it
just wanted to see these, they was not kids per se, but these younger men succeed, right?
Well, when my ex-husband went to prison, he told Terry, he said, I want you to watch her back.
Okay.
You know, not knowing where I was going with my life.
Okay.
He's just like, I'm leaving. I need somebody to make sure she's good.
Mm-hmm.
But then I took off on my own.
Okay.
And Tyr was always around me. He was like my soundboard, my person that I would talk to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was my trusted friend.
Mm-hmm.
So the romance came much later on. Not when he was like 18, 17 or 18. I think he was 25 when the romance
So
came
you started
in.
Messing with him. Well, he started business at about 18 or so.
When he was with my ex-husband.
Okay. And now when he's 25... You guys
because we still friends.
After you make him that first million, like, hold up, you heard what my sis said. I'm gonna make you rich, okay?
And I don't know what I mean. Like I'm like he's
but it's
like
not like
struggling.
You're the type of woman if you're running this kind of business. It's not like you're the type of woman that everybody could have access to.
No.
So that limits your access to people
mm-hmm.
who you can be around, the men you can meet.
Right.
And so if this is the person around mm-hmm. who now becomes your confidant in a way.
Yeah, and he was just like, why you never had no money? Like, what's going on with you? Because I've always been around, I always had money. Mm-hmm. I always had a way to make money. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what that hustle was. When I did my hustles, I was always good at it, you know? And I couldn't understand, like, why you never had no money? Like, you know, I got money. You know, I got money in the basement. I got money everywhere. Mm-hmm. And my friend, this is my friend, I want my friend to have money, too.
Wow.
So that's how that started.
Okay.
You know?
So
and
little did you know, your friend that you wanted to have money to ends up now going down in history for having one of the most notorious empires,
mm-hmm.
now drug empires, that we've seen
right.
in our time.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So
when he started taking off, everything started getting big. He started making a lot of money. He said, now you don't have to do this. Now I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that's how that
So happened. Now how did the romantic piece get in?
I don't know. I'm just being around a person all the time.
Right.
You know, you being around mm-hmm. this person, you trusting them, then you know, you don't groom them like, oh, damn, you're looking okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start mm-hmm. looking at them.
And
know?
How was that for you as a older woman messing with this younger guy? Like, or was it okay, or you didn't look at it like?
At first, I didn't. I mean, at first, it was like, no, you're too young
okay.
for me. But as he started growing on me and maturing on me, I watched him mature. I've
mm-hmm.
seen him become this man. And I started being attracted to him.
Wow.
And he was somebody that I trust. I felt safe around, you know. I couldn't bring other people into my life because of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always knew to be safe.
Yeah, like not being able to be around so much
yeah.
because you to connect, you to join. Right.
And I just couldn't run out there. I was very, very private. A lot of people didn't know what I was doing unless you really, really knew me. Okay. So I wasn't out there like that. I had my few friends that, you know, that I trusted in him. And that's how it came about.
So now, sis, it happens, right? It happens, right? Your friend, who's your confidant, ends up becoming your lover.
Yes.
What do y'all say after that? What do you think, like, well, let's get back to my ex-husband. How will the world view us? How will we think? Like, did any of these things cross y'all minds at the time?
It crossed my mind, but I had already knew that once my husband came, no matter who I was going to be with, if it wasn't going to be Terry, whoever it was, I wasn't going to be back with my husband because I was in a very abusive relationship with him. So I had already planned in my head, I'm going to make sure he's good through this whole prison thing. I'm going to take care of him. I had that type of, you know, unrealistic loyalty, you know, like I'm going to make sure he's good. When he come home, I'm going to have him, he's going to have some money. He's going to have a place to stay. But I knew I wasn't going to be with him. So if Terry had nothing to do with it, no matter who I would have been with, I wasn't going to be with him.
Good place. So now let's go back. Rewind. Okay, so let's go back because this is good. You set the stage for us. We understand who you are, what you did, your contribution to the organization. Mm-hmm. Now let's get to how in the hell did you get there?
I always find it so interesting, like women who, you know, from what you see on TV, and we know that's not a real place necessarily, but you only see men in these positions. So when you get into the thickness or the truth of these stories and you see that there are women there, It becomes, for me, the audacity, the balls, the courage to be in such a dangerous, not just male-dominated field, but a dangerous male-dominated field.
And be a woman.
And then thrive. Mm-hmm. And now to be able, in this world and day and age, to now tell your story in a specific way.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question for our audience would be, like, yo, was your parents hustlers? Mm-hmm. Like, was you around this all your life? Like, was you born and you knew, yo, I'm going to do this? Or, like, what happened?
It's the weirdest thing. I have three brothers, then it's me. Then I grew up with my mom, who was my best friend, you know, growing up. And then I was raised with my stepdad, which they were hard workers. Mm-hmm. My brothers were hard workers. I was the only one that was attracted to the streets.
Okay.
My brothers would talk about it to this day, like, why was you so different? Why was you, you know, you was more street than us and half the people around us. And I don't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Why was my attraction to the streets more so than them? Because I was raised in a middle-class home. It wasn't like we struggled. I never seen the lights out. I never, you know, went hungry. We grew up with two cars. My mom had a car. My dad had a car. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that. But what was going on in my head that I wanted to be out in the streets? Danger, getting away with stuff was my high. Like, ooh, I got away with that. No matter what it was. No, you know, we just got away.
So that's our similarities again. Yeah. So a lot of people think when they see me or see my story, they think I come from, you know, this other life, and I don't.
Yeah.
I came from two hardworking parents who got to it, that was law-abiding citizens that I had no reason, but I was attracted to the other side, and I got that other side, and then it just was like I went crazy, so I could relate to that too.
Yeah, one day my mom sat me down, and she said, "Bad boys." And she said, "Where did you come from?" And I thought, like, what did she mean, where I come from? I came from you. But I was so different from my whole household, like everything that I wanted to do, always growing up. They used to call me GOAT when I was little. Now we know what GOAT means. But I don't think they contributed to that name back then. But I was thinking, like, why do you used to call me GOAT? So now I realize I was the GOAT.
So who introduced you to the hustler lifestyle?
My ex-husband.
And how old were you when you met him?
19.
Okay.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So the most impressionable age, getting out into the world.
Yeah.
You know,
it was like I walked in, like I always say in the movie, in my interviews, it was like when I seen him, I walked into this party. This party was just like, it had to be the hottest party that I have ever seen, other than on television. I went in there. I came through that spin, that you know, that revolving door, and I was a new woman.
Wow. Oh, wow. So what was it? What did he say? What did he do?
It wasn't even about what he said. Looking at him, he looked so fly. My ex-husband was a fly man. Mm-hmm. But the people that he was hanging with, he was a young man. He was young, but the people he was hanging with were older, and they were older hustlers, and they looked fabulous to me. The women looked fabulous to me. It was like, oh, this is what you always wanted to be. This is where you always wanted to be.
This is where you belong.
This is where I belong. I felt like I fit in. Yeah, mm-hmm. I felt like I fit in. You know, this is, I didn't want to be boring over there, you know, in the neighborhood no more. I wanted to be over there. Okay. Over there looked good to me.
So now you get over there, and what happens? Give us the glimpse of how you end, and now what?
He would just right away, he start giving me things, mm-hmm. you know, right away. The jewelry, the coat. My mom said, when he gave you that fur coat, that first coat, I knew it was over. Mm-hmm. And it was. It was like, I want these things. You know, the cars, I'm driving his cars. I'm doing the things.
We like to drive a guy's car because it's like I'm marking our territory. Like if a man trusts you with his car, it means, you know, this is serious.
So you become the it girl.
I become the it girl.
And your town.
And I'm from the west side. Mm-hmm. He from the east side. So when I come back on the west side, I'm looking fly. I'm getting attention, mm-hmm. you know. And it was just
being addicted to that.
I was addicted to it. That was, you know. Too. Because he wanted it fast. My mother, I think I grew up spoiled and probably entitled. Mm-hmm. But I don't even got to ask you. I don't even got to do this. I mm-hmm. can get this fast now. And when I'm seeing the money he making, I'm like, oh, I can do that. I could do that better. He was showing me how to cut the rock, and I was just doing it better. He would just have me just do it like, okay, you can do this. You know, I trust you. You got that? I got this. I could do it, you know.
In your household, being the only girl, kind of the center of attention, mm-hmm. you know, and then now being mm-hmm. this woman in this household, and you're with your boyfriend now being the center of attention, and he's able to upkeep that in a different way.
It's like that song, you know, not with the reverse. He upgraded me.
He upgraded you. But did he really? So let's get into that.
I was about to say, when you, yeah, wait, I was just
you know what,
ask
really
that.
Did, because I said, I was working. Mm-hmm. I was working just as hard as you, but you know, my head, I'm like, you fooled me.
And now you bought into something that now we both know is an illusion.
Mm-hmm. It's an illusion.
Like, it comes with all the glitz and the stuff, but now what really happened. So mm-hmm. let's talk about this relationship. Was it all peaches and cream or what ended up coming out of it?
A lot of abuse.
So I was like, what does that first moment of abuse look like? You're happy, you have your fur coat, you're driving the car, you know, just mm-hmm. you know, as a 19-year-old girl, like.
I don't, you know, like the first hit, like it was like, it caught me off guard. Mm-hmm. But you know, right after, he's not going to let you go home. You can't leave. He's very remorseful. At first, I thought, like, okay, maybe. You know, back then, mm-hmm. I never heard of it. I didn't see it. I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. I'm young. You know, like, why is he doing this? But then once he did it, he's showing me love again. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Now he's back loving me. He's extra with the things. Now I'm not, you know, he's right under me. He's crying. He's like, oh, I love you so much. I would never do it again. Mm-hmm. And it just became a habit. This was the cycle that I was in, and I didn't know how to get out at that time. You know, I was young. I didn't know how to
get
out.
That's a real place. And so many other people have dealt with some form of abuse like that, mm-hmm. right? When somebody hits you and hurt you, but then they start to show you love, so you become confused.
You're very confused. Mm-hmm.
And that confusion often allows you to stay longer
than you should, you know, because I was very confused the first time. And then, like you say, you start showing more and more love, the more, you know. But then it would just be, like, he started controlling me more, you know. And I didn't understand it. Like I said, I was very young. I didn't see my
parents. So what was the controlling like?
I was always with him. Mm-hmm. Always, you know, nobody could really look at me, you know, and nothing like that. He could do things to me, but he was very protective of me on the outside. You know, like, nobody could say, you know, anything there. Nothing disrespectful. Mm-hmm. He was that type of man. He's very controlling me.
Did he keep you isolated? Or did he let you just be your own person?
No, he didn't let me be my own person. It was always a setup. You knew that because of who he was, that you had to be that type of woman around him, you know.
So how did he begin to entrust you with all of these, I guess, with this control, entrust you now running the business?
To me, it's weird. Like, you know, he trusted me. Like, I was, like, everything. I knew everything, you know, besides, you know, wearing a man cheat. But I knew everything. He wanted me to know everything. Okay. You know, he didn't trust anybody on the streets, you know, like any of the guys that was around them. They couldn't owe him anything. They couldn't do anything. You know, he made sure that I knew everything. Like, if something happened to him, like, he would always sing that song back then, just in case I don't make it home tonight, he would say, just in case, you know. Okay. When the song came, that was his favorite song. He let, you know, because he knew that he could trust me. I basically took care of that man, even though he was abusive, he still knew that I took care of him. I nurtured him. I made sure he was good.
So now this is the epitome of toxicity, right?
Very much so.
So we here on the we about to talk about the toxic things, bro. These are the signs. You meet somebody, they woe you. They show you the side of life that really isn't it. Now, once they get you hooked in, right? Now they beating on you. They using physical force as another means of fear to control you, to make you stay. But at the same time, they make you fear them, they also make you love them more, because they showing you so much passion and so much attention. And you're like, oh, well, maybe. And now you're getting confused and you're staying longer in the situation when you really should be out. And now you got the gifts, the money, and all those things, which confuse things more. And then it's almost like he grooms you because he trusts you, because you went through his system.
Yeah, and I felt like I had to take care of him. I mean, he grew up in such a bad household. And in a way, I kind of like felt like sorry for him. You know, like.
So you made an excuse.
I'm always made an excuse.
For him. For his actions. How many of y'all can say y'all did that? Because I know I've done that, and I've stayed stuck in places too, making excuses for someone who they knew what they was doing.
Right. Yeah.
Because I believe he was you know, you're pre-calculating.
Right.
It's crazy. It's
crazy. We sit there, and just like with anything, you know, that he was cheating and all that, we always make an excuse for it. We so, I don't know what it is. We just so love this person. We feel like we have to take care of them, too. In my head, I guess, he couldn't do any better without me. Wow. You know, like.
Made you feel a false sense of worth.
Of worth, yeah.
Right? Through all of this toxicity. So those are some of the signs we should look for. And now what is the crazy moment in the violence where you're like, oh, shoot, this is crazy.
It was getting crazier. Yeah, crazier.
So explain that. Tell us what that looked like.
The more the money came, the more, you know, the drugs was involved. And it was just, like, when I say the fights was just crazy, he would just come in and it just, no matter, you know, it could be anything. It was just so off guard. It was no real reason, you know. The dinner wasn't right or something, like something crazy. And it would just.
And he would beat you.
Yeah.
And did he beat you bad? Was it light? Did you have black eye? Like, what was the extent of
guys, honey, wow. I don't have my nose broke, broken eye, you know, black eyes. Stitches, broken up. It was just crazy. The stuff, when I look back at it, I'm be like, "What? Why were you so insane and stayed?"
Did your family know?
When he would do things like that, he would. That's when you don't see your family. That's when you isolated. You know,
but he doesn't want nobody to know.
Yeah, and him and my brothers had gotten to it a few times. Until it was like, oh, she's just gonna go back. You know, she's just gonna go back anyway. So everybody would just give up, and they would think, like, okay, when they didn't hear from me, they probably knew. But when I come back around, I'm okay. I'm fine. We're in a good place. We look like this happy family, you know, because it was me and him and the kids. And you know how most men do once they know when they do something.
So you have kids for him at this point?
No, when did the children start? So you're running this business, you taking this abuse, and then you start having children.
I would... Like I'm saying, it would be back and forth. I would leave sometimes, but no matter where I would go, this man would find me. He would find me. Like, it's like I had a tether on me or a chip in my body or something. Because he was so known in the city that he could just get anybody to tell him anything. You know, they would, like, it was like, okay, I can't tell this person where I'm at. I can't hang out with this person because he would find me in some way. He would always draw me back in. Like I said, just very, you know, like, mental, like, very a broken young woman and not really realizing where this brokenness came from. But I realized I was broken as a young girl before I even met him. Somewhere I was already broken. Even though I looked at my household as normal, I thought it was normal, but somewhere deep down as a little girl, I was broken to even want to be in that lifestyle, be with this type of person, feel like what he's doing to me, I'm loved. You know, I thought I was getting loved. I thought I had great parents, but maybe something was missing.
Have you been able to identify that one thing?
I think it was just not having a biological father. And I always thought I was different. I grew up with my brothers. They were light-skinned with green eyes and nice hair. And here me, I'm thinking, I'm not even dark, but I grew up thinking I was a dark girl with coarse, nappy hair. That's mm-hmm. how I felt. I didn't feel attractive. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where it came from, you know, wanting that, wanting to be like they were, you know. Okay. Even though they didn't treat me different, mm-hmm. I felt different, okay. You know.
That's a real place. Mm-hmm. So self-esteem from a young age, and that's why it's so important for us to lift our little girls up and tell them how beautiful they are, how dope they are, so that mm-hmm. they know and really live in the fullness of that, so they're not vulnerable to predators.
Yeah.
It's a real place.
And my parents, my mother thought maybe just shopping, buying me things, she was showing me love. Mm-hmm. But really, I don't remember those great hugs and I love you and you're a beautiful little girl. Mm-hmm. You're smart. You know, you're bright, you're pretty. My mother was adopted, so once I got older, we had that conversation, and she said, I really didn't know how to love. She said, I knew I loved you with my whole life.
Wow.
But I didn't know how to show love.
That's a real thing. Know? And as parents, that's oftentimes, really real. We don't have a manual. Yeah. So we give what we got, mm-hmm. right? And sometimes mm-hmm. that's just not good enough. But this man who's beating on you,
I was telling
you. You know, now he's telling you how much he loves you, right? Mm-hmm. Now he's buying you the fur coat. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing all the things. Of course, mm-hmm. you're going to be so confused and stuck because you're receiving a love like you never really got before. But this thing ain't really love because it's toxic. Mm-hmm. Crazy. So mm-hmm. how did your relationship with him finally end?
When he went to prison.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just, it was getting bad, too. You know, I'm stabbing him, I'm blowing up his car, he blowing up my car. Because
that's what you find, like, in these toxic relationships, you become toxic.
Yeah,
and
you become toxic.
I can stay longer because now I'm doing something back. I'm hitting back. Yeah. I'm not just taking it. But it's all
that's
abuse.
A real thing, too.
And I've had conversations with women where their justification is the fact that they fought back mm-hmm. or that they didn't lie down, or even my own story mm-hmm. where I feel like, well, I didn't just take that. Like, I did my own things and people. But it's like, no, I shouldn't have to entertain toxicity after being abused.
Now you're becoming someone who you're not.
Who you're not.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So now you're becoming a monster, you know, because the person is a monster, right? So mm-hmm. It's too much.
Right.
It's toxicity, and it's just something mm-hmm. that you have to break free from. But God loved you so much.
Oh, he loved
you. That he took him away. So what you couldn't do in your own strength to happen, and that often happens to our sisters, mm-hmm. right? Something happens, and now you no longer, oh, my God, I'm dying. But you don't even understand it. When you mm-hmm. can't help yourself, the universe is actually working for you.
But still, I was still broken. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. So because if I wasn't a broken woman, now that I look back at my second relationship mm-hmm. with Terry from BMF Southwest T, that I was a broken woman. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? To even get in that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And explain that.
What I'm saying, I was just broken. I wasn't healed. I wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. You remember, I'm coming from a broken place.
Another toxic relationship.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you brought some of your toxicity into that new relationship?
I think he watched and knew that I was broken. Mm-hmm. And he prayed on that to me. Ooh. You know what I mean?
Hmm. This was a young man.
Yeah, because, but, I mean, even though when I look back at it now, you know, I think he needed something from me, which was that money and that power. I made him look mm-hmm. the power. I'm with this woman now. I'm becoming powerful, but I really don't feel like it was, like, real love. You know, I'm just somebody broken that this is my friend. I'm not healthy. If I was a healthy woman like I am today, because I think, and this is what a lot of women, when you come out of situations, any relationship, I don't care, healthy, unhealthy, whatever, I think you need to sit back, get yourself together, wonder, think about why that relationship didn't work out. Mm-hmm. What was it about me that I went through that? What happened
baby,
in that last
talking result? About the eight steps, sugar. Doing processing. Right. Processing. Having that time out to really analyze yourself and heal before you get into something that's crazy and toxic.
Because this is a young man that never, I was always that person that, I was that go-getter. Like, even with my husband, we going to have things. We going to have this house. We going to have this cars. We going to have this credit. We going to have this money. We going to have this businesses. This is what we going to do. And I had those things. So when you go to a young guy that don't even have those things, that don't even have that mindset, where was I thinking? I'm trying to groom somebody. I'm an older, much more mature woman.
That's what I was saying. So it felt safe, though.
It felt, you know, it just felt safe.
Especially when you feel like... I feel like as a woman, sometimes if you are in power now, you're not being abused, you're grooming this person who now looks up to you and reveres you because you have all these things that he now wants and he needs to learn. Mm-hmm. And so now it feels safe to groom
it's
him.
He's false self-esteem.
It's false.
Yeah. So no, it's none of it's real. I'm just saying not real. You feel safe in that moment. Mm-hmm. As this broken person, you feel safe in what you're doing.
Well, she's explaining is that, and I know because, again, I identify so much because I had low self-esteem, didn't feel pretty enough, didn't feel good enough. Mm-hmm. And those things allowed me to get into really toxic relationships, same situation. And then I became the fixer of everyone's life.
Fixing everybody.
Right? Because not fixing you. Felt like that gave me my self-worth.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I see the pattern now. Like, and that's why I said this couch is so important.
Yeah.
And it's not just for the person sitting in it. It's for us. Because now you become the fixer. So now you feel like, okay, boom, I could give him something. Like you told him, I'm going to make you rich. I've seen myself, you know, doing some of those same things to people and did it because I had that power. Mm-hmm. And it was like I got this false esteem and false adrenaline going through somebody else.
Right.
Because I'm not fixing myself.
You're not fixing yourself. You just, if I fix this person, you're trying to just put that back in the back of your mind. Like, you thinking, like, I'm fixing myself because I'm fixing you. But no, I'm still damaged. Mm-hmm. I don't want to even talk about those things no more. I want to, let's move on. Let me help you. Let me fix you. Let me get you together and we can run this thing. But I still got all that damage, all that stuff inside
of me. And you know
what's
so crazy about that piece? When you fix something that was supposed to really remain broken or whatever the situation is, it begins to revert on you and resent you.
And resent me.
Every single time.
That's what happens.
When you give people things that they didn't work hard for, when you doing all of these juggling and playing the matrix, these particular people
end up resenting you.
Yeah. And it becomes the worst relationship you could ever have.
Yeah.
I know it. Because I lived it.
Yeah. And so once he said, you don't have to work anymore, and he took over, now he has the power of me. Because now I'm dependent on him.
How did that change the dynamic of the relationship?
It just changed it. It was just horrible. And but now I don't put my life inside. I don't move to California. I don't put my name on these houses. I don't do all these businesses, you know, and everything. Now I'm stuck.
Wow.
You know, I'm literally stuck, even though I'm trying to still, like, well, we were best friends, we were friends, what happened to that love? And then you
wake up one day.
And it's just
gone.
And that person is treating you like.
Because now he's making you feel like you regular. He know you're
not
regular.
But he's trying to make me feel like
regular. Because now he's trying to bring you back down again and break your esteem so that he could feel, you know, because the truth is you really was the plug.
Right.
But nobody else can't know that. So I'm going to push you all the way down so I can rise up.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So no matter what, you know, all the jewels, the big house, the cars and all that, the parties and all that, I was still, my soul was aching inside. Mm. I was dark inside. I was hurting inside.
That's a real place. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your transparency. Mm-hmm. So now let's get to the story. So now you're in California. Everything is happening. You see the BMF name blowing up and all the different branches and the states and they balling and the celebrities and everybody's calling and screaming. what are you thinking and what happens next?
You go, I was on a roller coaster ride. I was really, I never had been in a place like that. Even though I was looking good, I was living two different lives. I always say, I didn't really know who I was because I'm pretending to be this and I'm pretending to be this person. You know, I'm in Hollywood. Now I got to act like the Hollywood life. I can't be, you know, the drug lady. My kids in these prestigious schools. So now I'm raising little, they got to pretend to raise them. We all lying, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, like.
Living a life of pretend.
Life of pretend. And you don't even realize that you putting this all on your children, you know. So it was very selfish of me to put my children through it because nobody else would have put their children through it.
So what happened with your children as a result of this?
One of my sons went to prison, and my two younger sons was left at home. And it's like nobody really cared. You know, I was the only woman that out of that group that went to prison and left their children at home. And that's why
Okay, so the indictment comes down, and as we know the story, there's informants, and everybody's telling, and it all goes to hell. The brothers begin to fight against each other, so they have their own internal war, and now you also get caught up. So what did the day that they came and got you look like, or when did the, what was the beginning of the end of the empire?
You
kind
of, you know, all that billboard, I don't know if everybody heard about the billboard and all
that.
Well,
no, tell our viewers, because some of them don't know.
Well, Meech was in Atlanta, and Terry was in California, we were in California, and in Atlanta, you know, they had put up this big billboard, you know, like, you teasing the feds now. The billboard said, BMF, the world is ours.
Wow.
You know, and I, coming from such a private life, you know, didn't understand. Like, I kept saying, y'all gonna get me indicted. Years and years, like, coming up into the indictment, y'all gonna get me indicted.
Sure.
And I'm already, we are already at odds anyway. You know, I had even left and came back because my kids were still in school and I left them there, but I had left. And sure enough, I'm indicted. I knew it. I said, after all the years that I had been in the
street. Did you know it was coming? Or, like, what was the date like when you found out that you was indicted?
You know it was coming. You could feel it. You know, you're hoping and you're praying, like, oh, I hope I get past this
because
one.
Because it was private, and then all of a sudden people start boasting. And
yeah.
You're saying, now yeah. You're going to see.
And see, now I'm spending a million in the strip club, throwing it up.
Okay.
I just never heard of that because I'm in the streets. I don't feel like throwing my money away because we're taking serious chances. Mm-hmm. And they just was just doing so much. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to prison. I just knew, and I kept trying to think, like, how can I secure my kids? What's going to happen to them? You get scared. You know, my days was barely sleeping.
Because you feel the energy.
I feel the energy.
I felt that same energy before.
Yeah, it's something you feel it. It's
so
like
now you finally get the knock on the door, what happens?
The most dreaded knock, like a day of my life. It's like I'm my younger sons were downstairs and I'm yelling, like, oh my God, the police, you know. And only as a mother, you don't even, you know, I'm not thinking about myself anymore. Now I'm realizing what I did to my children, what I did to my sons. You know, like, they seeing this for the second time. Because remember, my ex-husband.
Got caught up the first time.
The first time.
Wow.
And me, like, I'm supposed to protect these little people, these young people.
They're in danger. Yeah. So the feds come in, they knock on the door. So do they find anything or what?
No. See, I never had anything at my house. I didn't play to having the guns at my house. Anything around my fam, my sons, I didn't want that around it. I didn't want it around me. Once I decided, okay, you going to do this, I'm out of it.
So your house was clean. Mm-hmm. So what did they get? So it was hearsay or conspiracy or what did they
get? Well, at first they charged me with the conspiracy to distribute so many kilos of cocaine.
Okay.
That they charged me with that and money laundering.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the best lawyer ever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, you're going to prison. She said, but I'm going to get you the best deal I can get. And as they were trying to, some of the people that were snitching, trying to say, oh, yeah, I got drugs from her, you know, things like that. And the proving with the motions going back and forth, the court, found out that all of that was sort of lies, and they threw that out. Because one thing about me, I never wanted to deal with anybody they were dealing with. Mm-hmm. I always thought they were young and, like, idiots, you know? And that's probably why a lot of the heat came on me, or, the tension, like, we don't like her and stuff like that. Because I'm a much older woman. I shouldn't even been playing in the playing field with these kids to me. You know what I mean? And so I...
But did they get your son at that time, or...
They didn't get my son. They didn't get my son until a year later. Because what happened was, when they didn't take the plea deal, the prosecutor said, if y'all don't take the plea deal, we gonna supersede the indictment. And when they superseded the indictment, they came and got my son. They came and got my three nephews and my cousin.
Wow. So you had how many, yourself and how many family members get caught up in that?
Five of us.
Five. Now that.
That was a... the most hurting feeling that a woman could
as a woman, as a mother.
As a mother.
Woo.
Because now I'm looking at these people and I'm carrying so much guilt. Mm-hmm. So much guilt.
Because they ultimately entered your lifestyle.
They came into my life. When I went into that hole, I brought my whole family into that hole. Mm. My family. So out of that whole indictment, the bulk of that indictment, and everybody, most people went by themselves. Mm-hmm. Well, you got the two brothers, but I took my whole family.
Wow.
And they all were young. Mm-hmm. They were all, my son was, when he got first and got indicted, I think he was 21, 22.
Wow.
And he was sentenced to 11 years.
Jesus.
My nephew, 8, 10. Jesus. My cousin, 13. So when I walked that yard and I'm in that indictment, you know, now I'm feeling it like, the most, I can't even tell you the regret, the hurt, the pain that I was suffering. I was out of my mind.
Mm.
I literally went out of my mind. I was drinking every day, drugging every day, just to be numb, just to not to feel that.
Mm. I know that feeling. I know the feeling of, for me, the most hurtful part of my incarceration was the impact it had on my children,
mm-hmm.
not being there, you know, and mm-hmm. so forth and so on. I know how it was hard for me to forgive myself. And so now you've got to go through the steps of self-forgiveness. You got to be able to really, 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 mm-hmm. you know, to heal, forgive yourself. Mm-hmm. And now I can only imagine your kids going to prison for something that you know you kind of brought them into.
Yeah,
what
I made it seem to me. I made it seem easy because you got to think this. I was this lady from a young girl, 19 years old, and never got caught up. You know,
so they watching you.
They watching me.
And
so,
want to be like you.
Yeah, it was easy. I figured if I was a doctor, a lawyer, accountant, my sons would have been that.
That's right. That's right.
You know, but they picked up the lifestyle that I picked. You know that.
So
I was
how did you ultimately heal from that resentment?
I didn't heal until prison.
Okay.
And when I first entered prison, I was so angry. Mm. So angry.
And you ended up getting sentenced how much time?
57 months.
Okay. So that's
roughly
5 years.
Yeah, I did. I was like, I know I'm going, but could you please not give me more than 10? Mm-hmm. I can't do more than 10. But I was sentenced to 57 months. I pleaded to 7. The judge went under because he said that, I don't know, I can't remember the law, the burning bed, like, you know, I was in abuse. He felt like, you know, you was in this abusive relationship from a young girl.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't possibly be really had thinking. So they gave me a couple points off of that, brought it down to 57 months.
Okay.
So I entered prison, and that walk through prison, I was bitter, 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 and I met a counselor who just talked to me. Let me tell you this story. I went to prison. Everybody told me I was going to work. You know, you have to work in federal
mm-hmm.
prison.
Mm-hmm.
They told me I was going to have to work in the warehouse. And I dreaded that. I'm like, me working in a warehouse? I
baby,
don't know shit about that.
I'll tell them the story between the house Negroes and the field Negroes in prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that's in the field, baby, they you got to do that hard labor. It gets real.
It's real, real. But I went up to, you know how you got to go to guy the counselor
uh-huh.
who give you a job. So he told me I was gone. He gave me the news. You're going to work in a warehouse. I got up. I touched the door now. Got up. Feeling more sorry than I ever feel. It's just raining.
Mm-hmm.
Pity, just the pit of, I'm so in pity. So I grabbed the door, and he said, Miss Welch. And I turned around. He said, you're going to work in a chapel.
Wow.
That was God.
So that's the house. That's the, then we go back to that house nigga. So she got to stay in the house while the others was out in the field.
But only thing it is, like that is, I was going to church, doing my tithes, doing extra tithes, thinking because I'm in the street, I'm going to get us all the money to the church, make sure everybody, the kids, the homeless people are fed, thinking that I'm, you know, making my wrongs right. Mm-hmm. But when I, and I'm in church, I'm sharp, I'm every week, I'm just designing Gucci down. I'm walking in, I'm in church. But didn't know nothing until I went to prison. Didn't know, I mean, the whole story of Job, God, the Bible, all that. I didn't even know it was so many different religions. I'm in prison. I'm prison in the West Coast. Not many black girls. I get this.
What prison was you in, sis?
Victorville.
Okay, okay.
And so, you know, that was kind of rough. Mm-hmm. It wasn't no camp to me. I'm like, because we surrounded mm-hmm. by the maximum mm-hmm. Men's prison. But I was the only one out of almost 700 women that worked in the chapel. And for him to give me that chapel job, I knew that was God telling me, while you here, I'm going to work on you.
That's good.
Because I never, you know, out of everything, out of everybody on that camp, why he give me that? That was God. You need to find me. Now you got to call on me. You ain't got nobody stripped of everything. You don't have your family around. Kids ain't around. You can't call your mama. You can't call nobody. You're going to have to sit here mm-hmm. and call on me every day.
Wow.
And every day, talking to that counselor, reading that Bible, learning, trying to figure out who I was. Mm-hmm. How did I get here? It was always every day. You're going to find out, how did you get here? What was wrong with you? What was so broken in you mm-hmm. that you ended here? Wasn't raised wow. like this. You can't talk to your sons. You can't talk to your, you know, I had nobody.
So you
I
did the work. That's when you actually got inside and mm-hmm. dealt with yourself. And we talk about that
mm-hmm.
through the journey. You that inner work is so necessary.
And that's when it was. And I said, that was the best, even though you dread going in prison, mm-hmm. it was the best experience for me.
Oh, one of the things I keep hearing you say is, in this entire story, even through the abuse, you're not pointing the finger at anybody. Mm-hmm. Your answers, you're constantly seeking the answers of yourself, mm-hmm. taking accountability for what is happening. And I think that shows, like, tremendous level of strength.
You dope, sis. Yeah. You dope.
Thank you.
And it was mm-hmm. during my incarceration that the work that we're doing now mm-hmm. started.
Yeah.
So I started working on my inner work, inner mm-hmm. healing. I started writing books for incarcerated yeah. women. Like, that's where it happened mm-hmm. for me. And so I often say incarceration was my hospital.
It was mine. It was my therapy. I started journaling every day. Started talking to God every day. Meditating every day. Just was not in the in crowd. Just had to work on me.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.